August blends up and quorum
Methodist queen works only
case. Let's cut the bull.
Thanks for tuning in to Rebellion Radio, the Hunger Games podcast. Yippee-ki-yay.
All right. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Rebellion Radio, episode number 37. My name is Willie Collins.
And I'm Alex Bolova.
And fans, I hope you are listening very carefully because it took many attempts to get this recording to work. I feel so archaic right now. I'm talking to Alex on a telephone right now.
I know. I didn't know telephones existed nowadays.
I don't know what I know what a Skype phone is. I don't know what this device is. But we are talking on the telephone. I'm recording into my iPhone right now.
Yep. In case you can't tell, we've had some major technical difficulties, but you know what? We're sticking it out because you guys deserve our review of the long-awaited Catching Fire movie.
Beautiful segue. We are going to talk about the Catching Fire film today. We apologize. Elena and April couldn't get on. Elena, she had to do something important. It was a valid excuse. April, I don't think she's seen the movie yet.
Yeah, some fan she is, am I right? But we're kidding. Obviously, we love all of our co-hosts, and we just want to get out our review to you guys as fast as possible. If you tune in for our next episode, you'll be able to hear their reactions. But until then, Hurley, let's dive into this.
So Catching Fire, the movie, is here after 20 months of waiting. 20 months, Alex. I was a sophomore when the last movie came out. But it's here. So the first thing, first thing is spoiler alert. Clearly, we don't want anybody who hasn't seen the movie looking.
Haven't read the book, don't listen. If you haven't seen the movie, don't listen unless you want to, know what you're getting into.
I would recommend, even if you read the book, you know what's going to happen, but you just like, I just want to hear their thoughts. I would still stay away from this just because you want to go in with an open mind. It's cool to go in without having any expectations whatsoever. So.
Yeah, and I'm going to show my hand just a little bit. I think you should go see this movie. So I think it's worth pausing now if you haven't seen it and going out.
Alex, we said spoiler. That's a spoiler.
What? I'm spoiling my own podcast?
Yes. I'm kidding. All right, so first thing we want to talk about was our theater experience. Alex, did you go see this in the midnight release?
I did not get to see midnight, unfortunately, because high school, but I got to see it Friday night at 8 o'clock,
Okay. And
I was just surrounded with my friends. It was a mostly filled theater. It wasn't the crowdedness that I saw with The Hunger Games, but that was a midnight premiere, so that's bound to happen. But it was definitely a full theater, and definitely people were into it. Everybody was excited.
Okay, cool. So it is high school. It was probably not the best decision test-wise, as I, again, had a test that Friday. But I saw it Thursday night. Thankfully for me, our theater had an 8 o'clock showing Thursday night. So it was a little premiere, but not midnight. So the theater was full, but it was a great crowd. And I was really excited to see, my theater experience last movie was literally 99% teenage girls.
Right? Yeah, that's not too far off from this audience, but it was definitely a bit more mixed,
right?
The whole crowd.
Same for me, because this time, there was guys there. I actually went with a group of friends, and that actually included guys, which was nice, because last time I kind of snuck on a bandwagon full of girls. But I also saw, I saw an old couple, an elderly couple there, some families.
Yeah, this movie has a lot of wide appeal.
Yeah.
And I think the box office numbers, which we'll discuss later, really show that.
Of course, yeah. So, great experience, and nobody ruined moments by laughing too much. So
I mean, with my audience, it was a very vocal audience. When there was funny moments, which I was surprised by how many funny moments there were in Catching Fire, They laughed wholeheartedly. They screamed all the right moments. Just, it wasn't the annoying active crowd. It was the type of movie theater audience you love to be with, because everybody was just so wrapped up into it.
Yeah, definitely. So, positive experiences all around, I think. All right, let's get into generally what we thought of the film. I'm just going to say right off the bat, I was incredibly impressed with this movie. I thought everything that happened with the first one that I didn't like, we all loved the first one, you guys can listen to that episode, but this time I thought everything was escalated to a higher level, higher filmmaking, higher, acting, story, camera work, everything I thought was better than the first time. And one thing I just kept thinking to myself was how entertained I was. Like, I'm like, wow, I'm having a really good time, And mm-hmm. And I walked out of there wanting to watch it again, which I didn't quite feel with the first one. I don't know why, but, this one, I was really... I think it's going to have some rewatch value.
Mm-hmm.
Just because, just how much I liked it. So,
yeah, Alex, I mean, this was definitely a long movie. And to say that I felt its length isn't a criticism. I was never bored, but it took its time, it's very good for literary adaptation, because I felt like they got all the essential things in. My personal feelings about the movie, this is going to come off a little strange. I'm going to preface this by saying that I really like this movie.
Okay.
But I walked out of The Hunger Games feeling more excited, and I walked out of Catching Fire recognizing that this was the better movie, but not quite feeling that, sense of awe and amazement. I'm not sure if it's because it's the second time around going to see a Hunger Games movie, or if there's something in the film, and I think that's why I want to get through this discussion.
Interesting. Okay, because I felt this one, I walked out, and I just kept, first of all, my mouth was agape at the end, and I just kept saying, oh my god, because I was just so happy that they didn't mess this one up.
Yeah, don't get me wrong, I think this, the more I reflect on it, this is a perfect adaptation, really.
Mm-hmm.
They got everything important in, and it was so entertaining. I have to agree with you on that. Every aspect of the movie, all the casting was great, the acting was great, and I'll say it again, it was funny in some aspects, and that really helped to make it a more entertaining viewing.
Mm, I agree. So, we're going to get into some specifics, just a little discussion points. So, number one, the acting. What did you think of the acting this time around?
Well, I mean, we now have a few, Oscar winners in our presence, including Jennifer Lawrence.
Yeah,
fresh off of her Silver Linings Playbook Oscar. Here she is. And you know what? She's bringing a lot of what I saw in Silver Linings Playbook into Catching Fire. Like, in The Hunger Games, she played sort of the cold Katniss.
Right.
Not very emotional. But in this one, she definitely showed a lot more of Katniss's emotional side. And personally, I really like that. I think Jennifer Lawrence got to show a lot wider range of emotions in this movie.
Yeah, I definitely agree. She's way less stoic in this one, which on one hand is like, Katniss isn't that emotional, but at the same time, like, this is bigger, the scope is bigger, so, her emotional range is going to be tested a little more, so it's not going to just be, stone-faced.
Yeah, but I thought she was absolutely perfect in this role.
Mm-hmm. A few other things, actors I wanted to mention were, I was really impressed by Liam Hemsworth, actually. I really enjoyed his Gale. And some longtime fans are probably wondering what, but I really did sympathize for Gale in this one. I thought the character was fleshed out way more than the first one. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed his portrayal.
I will agree that I enjoyed his portrayal, but I feel like he is not really an entity in this film. Like, he's only on screen for, I'd say, like, 15 minutes. He leaves an impression, but he's much more of a plot device than the character in the book. I mean, he shows up to just be like, oh, look, we gotta go to the train. Oh, we can't run away.
True.
We gotta join the rebellion.
That's
and,
true.
He gets whipped and all that. And I feel like, though, Liam brings the acting chops to make me care, I feel like he was the least fleshed out character in the whole movie.
I'd say that's probably true, but I still think that it was better than what we saw in the first movie.
Oh, definitely. And he does get a bigger role than the first movie.
Yeah.
I think it's just the Hemsworths. I mean, really, that family got some good actors in there.
Good acting genes or something. Any other actors you wanted to talk about? I mean, we'll probably mention more. I really liked Finnick.
Yes, I was going to say that.
Honestly, the first time when he first came on screen, when he came over and gave Katniss or offered up the sugar cubes, I was like, wow, he's got he's really charismatic. Like, the way he talks is kind of slow.
I definitely think he is my favorite new actor from the movie. I thought he did a terrific job. He really brought a lot of the life to the scenes that he was in.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Going along the themes of perfect casting, I think he was just fantastic in that. And another new character that just blew me out of the water was Jenna Malone as Johanna.
Mm-hmm, I agree, yeah.
She definitely... Man, how to describe her. Because she really falls on every emotional, or every part of the emotional range. Because yeah. She has funny moments, but she also has the vicious moments. But she was just so fun. All the actors seemed like they were having a good time while filming this. And one of the biggest laughs that the audience got was during her interview and how she started, cursing out.
Yeah,
That was unexpected.
That was really unexpected. I loved how it was perfect for the character. We're talking about the scene where she goes "F you, F all of y'all," and she kind of looked into the camera, which was kind of cool because it's like, I also love the scene where she's in the elevator and she strips naked.
Yes,
that was pretty funny.
That actually played exactly how I thought it would.
Yeah, it was perfect.
I think I don't want to say it was my favorite scene, but it was my favorite comedic scene of the movie.
Right.
And I love PETA's sort of eye flick halfway through the scene. Speaking of PETA, Josh Hutcherson, what'd you think of them?
I thought it was really good. I think it's more, I think, let's see. Here's an interesting thing. I feel like he and Katniss kind of switch a little bit, only in the sense that he becomes a little more stoic than he was last time.
Mm-hmm.
Would you say that's true?
He does bring a more serious side than the last movie, and he's obviously been hurt by Katniss. That definitely comes through. Mm-hmm. And I think their relationship is much, much more interesting in this movie. But I think he still brings a lot of that natural charisma to it all. Whenever he's speaking on the victory tour and, his little one-liners, I thought he's just enjoyable to watch.
Yeah, I'd say there's plenty for the fangirls to swoon over with the PETA department. Let's talk about some of the aesthetics.
Okay. So, remember how we were watching the trailer and we noticed everything was in blue and orange?
Mm-hmm.
Remember when you watched the movie and everything outside the arena was in blue and orange?
Well, I actually didn't notice it that much. I was thinking about it. I was talking about the trailer. Did you think it was pronounced as it was in the trailer? I feel like it had to have been color screens or something.
Yeah, in the beginning of the movie, it was so glaringly obvious that was a color scheme. And I'm not sure if it was because I got used to it or if it went away as the movie went on.
Mm-hmm.
But in the first, I'd say 20 minutes, I would just look at the movie and be like, well, that's blue, and that's orange. And that's blue, and that's orange.
Right.
I mean, it didn't detract because this is something I'm going to bring up a bit later, but oh my god, the cinematography.
Oh my god.
But it was... the color scheme, it didn't bug me, and it did go away in the arena. It is mostly green.
Yeah.
But overall, the movie does look spectacular.
Oh my, Alex, it looks, Jesus. I mean, the whole shaky cam controversy with the first one.
It's gone.
It's gone, and I don't think anyone's complaining. I respect, nope. I see and respect what Gary was trying to do at that time, but... I think it's more effective, smooth, and then just the shots, and oh my god, it looked like the first shot was what? She was by the lake,
mm-hmm.
With her bow.
Yes,
straight off the bat,
everything is so crisp, everything's so clean, The camera moves just so smoothly, and even when it is handheld, above all, you can tell what's happening.
Right. And, you know, yeah. So aesthetic-wise, cinematography, I thought it was awesome. Like,
yeah, and also aesthetics, I think we can tie that into how we got to see a bunch of the other districts in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And so what do you think about seeing District 11 and all the other districts and the house parties and such?
I thought that it was all really well done, as usual. District 11, it was perfect in the sense of it looking like a poor district. Mm-hmm. I was really impressed with the Capitol, but I think where we can talk a lot about the aesthetic was the arena itself.
Yes.
With, you know, I mean, I'm going to say something controversial. I feel like this movie, for me at least, makes the first movie, pale in comparison.
I think I have to agree with that.
It's kind of a weird thing to say as being fans, but just the arena, like, you can't deny it. Like, the arena is just so much cooler in this one. Right?
I mean, it really is, and it's so well represented. I love how it's very obvious the zones that each time period is in, and when the water or gas or whatever comes up, you can see the invisible walls. I think everything with that, and also the force fields, were incredibly well done.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, everything, it was perfectly as I imagined, the whole force field thing. This is a random tangent. At the end, right, so she shoots the arrow into the chink in the armor, and the force field explodes, and we see the panels fall mm-hmm. down. Do you remember that part? And then
yes.
I was like, oh my, like, I always wondered if the, you know, it's a giant room, it's a giant bubble, it's not, you know,
mm-hmm.
that's real. It's like the Truman Show, which I talked about.
Yeah, it was cool to see a lot of the behind-the-scenes stuff, and you also got a lot of Plutarch Heavensby and him working with Snow and all the other game makers.
Perfect. Philip Seymour Hoffman, what a perfect choice. Oscar winner. Like, he's a great actor, but then in this role is, like, perfect.
Yeah, nobody's going to argue that Philip Seymour Hoffman is not great in this movie.
Right.
However, while we're talking about Plutarch, I think while I said that there's a lot of things that are left in, including, you know, our favorite cat in the world, Buttercup.
Yes.
Which I love seeing her in the, like, I guess, first scene.
She actually got replaced from the first movie, if you... I'm not sure if you heard about that, but the first one, she was black and white, and then Suzanne Collins requested they change it to a tabby.
Good old Suzanne.
Yeah.
But things that were left out, and I know we'll go more into Haymitch, but with Plutarch, he doesn't take out a clock during his dance scene with Katniss.
Yeah.
So what do you think of that?
Well, okay. Here's what I think about that. I think, first of all, we have to accept that it's a different medium, right? Film mm-hmm. versus, you know, the book. And in the book, I think when you're reading the words, she can be a little more obvious with the correlation. Like, oh, he holds out a clock, but then later when you're looking at the arena, you're like, oh, you know, when you're reading it, at least you're just thinking, you're not exactly thinking clock. I think if right. they had shown an actual watch, and then, you know, later on shown aerial shots of that arena, it would have been too obvious, I think.
I'm actually going to go on the opposite end and say that without showing the clock, I feel like it came a little bit out of the blue. I mean, we were obviously expecting this, mm-hmm. but if you hadn't read the books, and suddenly they just go, oh wait, the arena's a clock. I mean, on the one hand, you have the surprise of, oh, isn't that clever? But on the other hand, if you're going to set up a twist, usually you need to have something beforehand that gives an indication.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like without including the clock, it's the opposite of being, or it's the opposite of being overly subtle. It's just pulling the rug out from underneath you.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, I get that. Okay.
I mean, it's been a weekend, and I haven't been able to talk much with my friends who haven't read the book, so I don't know how they reacted to it.
Right. Yeah, that's true. The setup might not have been there. I wasn't too upset with that cut, though. There is, in that same aspect of things kind of not building up, there's a few things I didn't like. I mean, sorry, there's, you know, something I thought could have been improved on. And one of them was the whole, the Haymitch We never saw Haymitch's games.
Right. Yeah, that was completely left out.
Right, it was one of the larger cuts. And at first I was like, oh, you know, darn, we don't get to see that. That would have been really cool to watch, right? Because it was one of my favorite scenes in the book. But then later I'm like, there's more that we're missing there because we don't have any of the setup with the force fields.
Right.
And I guess they kind of replaced that with Beatty talking to Cadmus about it in the training room, which I love Beatty. Jeffrey Wright was awesome as Beatty.
Oh, that was, once again, perfect casting all around. I met him. I'm like, oh, they better not kill you off in this version.
Wait, you met him?
No, I mean, when meet him in the movie.
Oh, yeah, okay, right.
That's like, right, listeners. I met every cast member of The Hunger Games.
No, Jeffrey freaking Wright. But, yeah, so I guess there was that setup, but I in the book it worked really well because you see that he kind of bounces an axe off the force field and kills somebody, and that's mm-hmm. what wins, and then you see it happen with the force field in the current games, you're like, what?
Yeah, I think that's kind of the overall flaw of the movie, is that they don't set up things that happen later. And I think yeah. another big thing is leaving out Bonnie and Twill in the beginning.
I agree.
I mean, I didn't have a huge problem with that, but it's the same thing with the clock, because they bring in the idea that, oh, District 13 might still exist.
I'd say that's my biggest problem with it, because they I believe, if I remember this correctly, I think Snow just mentions, like, oh, you'll be gone, just like District 13, and then you're like, what happened then? Like, but they don't mention anything about the nuclear attacks. I think it would have been... But at the same time, it's like the movie is like 2.5 hours. You gotta make cuts somewhere. I don't know. It's a fine line.
When you get to the ending, it's already such a mind, like, fudge. Screw. Watch my language. It's so confusing as it is at the end to just have all this information dumped on you, like, District 12 is gone, District 13 exists. If there had been set up for at least District 13, I feel like it would have been less jarring. Maybe you want it to be as jarring as humanly possible. Maybe that's what Francis Lawrence was going for. Maybe one that shock value.
It's different with the film, you know, like, with the book, you read it, and then a couple hours later, or, you know, whenever, however long it takes you to read, then you get that two-punch, that 13 exists.
Right.
But here, it's like, you know, an hour later, 2 hours later, it might, I don't know, man. Who knows?
Yeah, we're really nitpicking at this point for what was really a job well done.
I agree. And
I think it was very well adapted.
Francis Lawrence, we can talk about his directing, but I think he made mostly all the right calls.
Yes.
And I don't, props to Lionsgate, like, how do they know, like, Francis, I feel like when we first announced, I didn't have a problem with it, but I feel like it was a risk.
Yeah.
Because he had done pretty much three films before that, including I Am Legend, which, you know, I really liked, but, you know, he did a phenomenal job with this, and I don't know, like, Gary Ross left and we were all upset, but I feel like we're in good hands now.
Yeah, he definitely has proven himself with this. If there's anybody I would trust with Mockingjay being in two parts, everybody's least favorite book, I trust Francis to pull this one off.
That was what I was thinking in the middle of the film, actually. I was like, well, if we have to make Mockingjay two parts, it's going to be with Francis. It's going to be cool. They're going to do a good job with all the themes. Like, I thought all the political stuff that was in it was very apparent. It was really... It's a smart movie, you know? It's not just a popcorn movie.
Yeah, definitely. Don't get us wrong. This is definitely a blockbuster film.
Yes.
Made for the masses, but it's a smart blockbuster.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, man, I really loved it.
Going on with aesthetics, what did you think about the CGI in this film?
I really liked it. And there were moments where where it really stands out. Like, that's really cool. What about you?
I thought it was an improvement on the first film. I think everything looked much more convincing. The only effect that I kind of just have a continuous problem with, I don't think I mentioned this in the Hunger Games review, but whenever Katniss's dress, like, turns to flame, I always thought that effect looks
a little weird.
I'm not sure how you would do it better, but besides that, I think everything was very well handled. I think the mutations looked great. I think the whole arena looked great.
Mutations looked way better than the first one, man.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And it was also nice to see they filmed on some practical locations. Like, they filmed in Hawaii. When they were on a beach, they were actually on a beach.
Oh, it looked awesome. And then the monkeys looked so good.
Yes, and like, did your audience...
that was a frightening scene.
Did your audience scream at the jump scare?
Yes. I did, too. I jumped. I was like, whoa, giant monkey.
Not to sound too full of myself, but I've been doing film studies. I know when the sound cuts out, something's going to happen. But it was still very effective. Obviously, you scream. That's saying something.
Yes, I mean, even if I know, I'm still jumping. Like, it's you can tell something's going to happen, but I can't prepare myself.
Yeah, Francis did such a good job with suspense, and I think the moment that I knew that he was doing a terrific job was the scene, right before Katniss goes up the tube, into the Hunger Games again, and she's talking with Cinna. I'm just sitting there, I'm like, oh god, oh, she can't go in there again. This is horrible. And I was actually having an emotional response.
Yeah.
And it was so great that he got me to feel that.
Right. And then with the whole Cinna being dragged away thing, that's another thing. This movie, on top of anything else, is super cinematic.
Very, yes.
And it's I don't know how I'm feeling this, but it feels different. It feels so different than the first one, but at the same time, I don't feel a disconnect.
Right. No, they feel part of a whole, and I think one of the things, I'm not sure if this bothers me or not, but this is definitely a middle movie. I don't feel like this is really a self-contained plot. You can't watch this without seeing the first. But on the opposite opposite side of the coin, this is a perfect addition to The Hunger Games. Like, it builds, it develops on everything. It gets better.
Right. I don't know. Yeah, I'm not sure if that bothers me either, because it is kind of Mockingjay Part Zero, in the sense that it's like, all right, let's set up everything for the Mockingjay movies, which was good. I'm not sure if they can avoid the whole middle part, but I was gonna say something, but I forgot, so it's okay.
So let's look at, I know our specialty, makeup and costumes.
Yeah, I feel like, I don't know, maybe we should see what April and Elena had to think. It looked great, as usual.
I mean, a lot of my friends have been commenting that the costumes in this movie look so ridiculous.
In which ones, specifically?
The capital costumes.
But, yes, but isn't that the point?
Dresses. I mean, yeah, it's definitely the point. But I felt there was almost a bit of a discrepancy between a lot of the costumes. Like, some things obviously felt futuristic, but there was a few things I got a 50s vibe off of. Some of that was sort of set pieces as well, but it kind of felt weird, the melding of different time periods.
Interesting. It's funny you mentioned that, because, I mean, I'm not sure if this has to do with the costumes at all, but Katniss and Peter are dancing at the Capitol Ballroom, and they played a minuet by Bach, I believe. Like, it was a really old song. I'm like, wow, they still have that in the Capitol.
Yeah, apparently that survived the apocalypse.
So, I didn't notice that with the costumes, so. Who did you go with, actually? I don't think we mentioned that. Did we mention, specifically who?
I originally went with my family, but then I arrived there, and I found, a group of 10 people I knew.
So you did.
And they were going to see
it
at the same time.
Well,
yeah, I kind of ditched them. But it was
okay.
Fun.
That's okay.
I got to sit with them.
Okay. So, yeah, I went with people who I don't believe read the books. So
okay.
That's kind of the audience I was with, friends-wise.
Right.
Okay. Do you want to talk about the music? Because I really do.
Did we get to camera work and directing yet?
I feel like it. Do you have anything else?
I mean, the only problem I had with the camera work, because I thought it was absolutely gorgeous, is that when you got into, I guess, the third act of the film, where it's the arena at night, I thought it got really hard to see it in some bits. Like, I thought the lighting was off in those.
Specifically with the darkness, you say?
Yeah, with the darkness. It was hard to see things at the end. don't know. Maybe that was just my projector, but...
Maybe. I don't know. I didn't notice that. But just with the cam work, just the whole fact that it's so smooth, I appreciated that.
Yeah, there's some gorgeous shots. I loved whenever there's sunset incorporated into things. It looks cinematic.
Right, and he knows how to shoot on with water on the beach. Like, you know, you can tell when a movie is in that setting and they don't do a good job capturing it.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought it was done well, so.
Definitely.
Alright, so the last little point about the film we want to talk about was music. James Newton Howard returned to score this, but Alex, if I didn't know that news, I would have told you that it was a different composer.
Yeah, no, when I saw his name at the end of the movie, I'm like, wait, what?
Yeah, honestly. Like,
so, this is a very different score.
So different. It's, oh my, I'm not complaining, though, because what it did was it takes the different scenes and gives them, it kind of gives them themes, which we kind of talked like, you know, maybe they're not going to do with the first one, and they didn't. But this one,
right.
you can tell the music is different in the arena. They kind of play violins, like really mysterious violins. I was like, ooh, this is kind of cool. Mm-hmm. And then it was just more of that. It's more, I feel like there's parts of this, like camera work kind of shifts towards the more traditional camera work. And then music, kind of more traditional. What do you think? Do you agree with that?
Yeah, there's definitely moments where I'm not gawking at what's being done. But I would listen to the score, and I'm just like, well, this just sounds, to use your words, cinematic.
Right.
It's much bigger. It's less subtle. It still had connections with the other film, because it had the capital theme, the ba-da-da-da-da-da, which, can I just say, written by one of my favorite bands, Arcade Fire.
Is that Arcade Fire? Did we ever confirm that? I feel like we talked about this.
Yeah, Arcade Fire wrote the theme of the Capitol and also the song at the end of the Hunger Games.
Interesting. Okay, cool. So, yeah, and I feel like there were some themes also that were similar, like character themes. I feel like Katniss and Peeta, they might be a reuse.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. There was one scene, only one scene where the music took me out.
Mm-hmm.
It was something in the arena that was just kind of a drum sort of score, and it felt understated in that scene. But for the rest of the film, I mean, I won't say it's the most memorable score, but I think it's definitely an improvement on the last one.
Mm-hmm. I really liked it, actually. I thought it was really, really good. I think the violins are what got me, because, like, when they're figuring stuff out in the cornucopia, and Amanda Plummer's Wyrus is, like, tick-tock, and that music is going up. I was just, and then there's another time where it's just pounding. It's like, dun, dun, dun. I was like, geez, this is amazing. But,
yep.
Yeah.
So are there any little random things that you want to talk about?
Do you want to do favorite scene?
Before we get to favorite scenes, can we talk about Thread?
The character.
The character, or should I say the actor and his Batman voice.
Remind me again.
The peacekeeper that comes in.
Oh, Romulus
Thread. Wet Gale.
Yes. Okay. Sure.
His voice. What? It's like, I'm the new. I'm Thread. You have all my rules. I mean, it was such a Christian Bale, gravelly-voiced Batman thing, and that took me straight out. Like, the guy, he didn't even look like he matched the voice. It looked like he was trying to do the voice.
That's the one thing. I did not notice the Batman, but now that you say it, that makes sense. But that's what I was thinking. I was like, his voice, his face looks kind of nice. Like, he looks like a nice guy.
Yeah.
And then he started to talk, and I was like, whoa, he's super evil. But I now that you mention it, I did like the character. I liked that whole whipping scene.
Yeah. And I think we should just go to little character moments. I loved Caesar Flickerman in this movie.
Yeah.
Like, totally. So many moments of just the laughing and overly smiling. It's just so over the top.
Yeah. Also with minor characters, Effie.
Effie. Oh, yes. Let's talk about Effie.
They opened her character way up.
I wouldn't say she's three-dimensional, but she's she's almost there.
I'd say last movie she was one-dimensional, and this movie she's two-dimensional.
Yeah, she has her crying scene. Like,
yeah,
I really liked Effie in this movie.
There's that scene, and there's also the time where she's like, I'm truly sorry, and she gives them their tokens, and it's like, you know.
Yep.
It opens that whole thing.
Did we get a That Is Mahogany scene?
Okay, I noticed this. It was a blink and you miss. She goes, she's taking Candace and Peeta through the Capitol halls, and she goes, mm-hmm. and she goes, this is wonderful, this is beautiful, this is the food, this is this, and she goes, look at this wood, it's mahogany, and then it cuts.
Yes, I remember seeing that. I think I was the only one in the audience to laugh at that.
Yeah, I like looked around to the people I was with, and they're like, they didn't look, but I was like, yes.
Yeah, but I think Effie was definitely an improvement. Woody Harrelson as Haymitch.
I gotta say, I wanted more of him.
Yeah.
I feel like there was less of him in this one. At least less than I wanted. Because in this one, I feel like we were supposed to see more, if anything.
Right.
But with this whole thing that got cut out with his games, but... You know, things got to get cut, and I guess that's his character kind of got the cut.
Yeah.
Would you agree with that?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
And any last? Oh, going back a bit, but when the arena, the ceiling was falling in, am I the only one that feared that Candace would be crushed by falling debris?
Yeah, I was like, what? They're gonna kill her before they even get her out.
Yeah, I mean, and that was one of the scenes where I'm like, this wasn't filmed for 3D, because this was not made for any 3D cuts. This is just a solid 2D film.
Right.
Which, can I just say, I respect that so much.
We never said if we... Did you see this in IMAX?
I did not get to see this in IMAX.
Okay, me either. I was about to, but then we switched our tickets in, because of a bunch of other group of friends was going to the non-IMAX. I'm probably going to see this again in theaters if I can, if I have any chance. I will hope to see it in IMAX then, but...
Yeah. Okay. I would love to see this on a bigger screen.
Oh, my God. And it's from what they've said, it's the entire arena is in IMAX. So you're talking 50 continuous minutes of IMAX footage, which is super rare in a commercial film. They don't usually film on IMAX cameras, so...
Yeah, and I think the last character we want to talk about is Prim. Mm.
She's mature in this one.
Yeah, she's not a fully developed character, but she has definitely changed since the last one.
Yeah, a moment comes to mind where her mom is like, kind of trembling, trying to administer a shot, and she kind of takes it and is like, Mom, I got it. It was to Gale when he got whipped. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, look at that.
Yeah, I definitely enjoyed Prim much more in this movie.
Mm-hmm. All right. So, do you want to go final scenes and we can do a wrap-up?
Wait, favorite scenes?
Yeah, just a few of your favorites. You don't have to pick one.
That's difficult. I think favorite arena scene... I think the Jabberjays was incredibly effective.
Yeah, totally.
I think that really captured what was going on in the book. I thought that it was perfectly put on screen.
And then the way Peeta kind of like trying to yell at her through the force field. Oh, it was was super good. Yeah.
And I also thought all the training scenes before the Hunger Games. I thought those were incredibly cool.
Yeah, was it a montage? I feel like it was a sort of this, which I liked. I enjoyed it.
Yeah. No, this movie definitely had montage in it, but it was used very well. Mm-hmm. And then, we did not talk about Peeta and Katniss showing off their skills to the judges.
Oh my God!
The hanging Seneca crane,
definitely up there.
Which, can I say, my audience laughed.
No. Actually, you know what? You're right. Mine did, too. I was trying to shut it out because I was like, this is such a powerful moment. And then, I mean, I kind of get it, though, because the tone is very defiant, and you could see it as just like, oh, good for her. But, like, oh, man.
Yeah, it is serious, and that's probably the only moment during the movie where I'm like, oh, audience, get with it.
Mm-hmm. Anything else from you?
Well, I think it's time to give our ratings out of 10.
Wait, gotta get my favorite scenes in there.
Oh, that's right. Ah, no, screw you,
Herlock. All right, so I would say, besides what you've already gone over, I really, really liked the climax in the arena. I thought that was that. Oh, just from the lightning to the cinematography to the acting, everything in that final scene to the moment where she, shoots in the force field. That was amazing. Like my jaw dropped. Like I was like, how is this so good?
Yeah, it was definitely much more coherent than in the book. Because I remember when I read the book, I'm like, what's going on?
Right. But it was like, I feel like in the book we speed read in our head just to get through it because we're so excited. Yeah. But in this time they force us. Like she takes a moment, she figures it out. She hears Fennec say, "Remember who the real enemy is." And that was that tie back to Haymitch, and it was like the timing was perfect.
Yeah.
And I'd say the very ending shot was really cool.
Yeah.
Let's see. Oh, I guess another one was super powerful. District 11.
Oh, yeah.
With the old man and the thing. Like, that whole sequence with the victory tour was really, really well done. I was really feeling both. Like, it was like a good meal, this movie. Like, at the end, you're like, I feel full, satisfied, like I got everything I needed. I don't usually get that. Like, this honestly, it's in my top 20 favorite movies of all time. That's a pretty big jump, but I'm going to go there. I really, it's not often that I walk out of a movie feeling that happy about it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that blown away. I'd say it's bumped up into my favorites, just not even adaptation-wise, just overall.
Okay. I really like this movie. And I think that's come through in this conversation.
Yes.
But I don't know why I have hesitation.
Yeah.
And I think it really is just, it was such high expectations, and they were met, but they weren't exceeded.
Mm-hmm.
I had a lot of high expectations going into this film, and you know what? It fulfilled it.
Right.
But it didn't go above and beyond. I think this was incredibly solid. I think you couldn't have made a better movie with the people working on this. I think this is the best Catching Fire movie that we can make at this point in time.
Yeah. So what is your rating out of 10?
I'm split between an 8 and a 9. Because I feel like a 9 is a bit too high, but an 8 is a bit too low.
You know what they have for those?
What?
0.5s, my friend.
That's right. I'm going to give this an 8.5 out of 10.
Very nice.
I was incredibly entertained. Was it long? Yes. But did I enjoy every second of it? I did. Everything was bumped up. The acting was terrific. The camera work was fantastic. All the problems I had with the first film are gone. I think the only reason I'm hesitating is because the first one I loved so much, but reflecting on it, it wasn't, as terrific as Catching Fire. I think Catching Fire is definitely the better movie. I say definitely go out and see this. The critics are right. They're raving about it. The box office shows how much people are enjoying this. I think if you haven't already, I don't know why you're listening still, but go out and see it.
Yes, I agree. I'm going to give it a 9. It's amazing. I felt so entertained. The first one I felt was a little bare bones, and this one I feel like is just more fleshed out. 9 out of 10 for sure. Alright, that does it for our thoughts. We're going to talk about just a little more things with the movie and then get into some listener reactions. The first thing was reception from the critics, which we always want to consider. So we're going to be looking at the Rotten Tomatoes, just a few snippets. It's doing amazing on Rotten Tomatoes right now. It has an 89% out of 205 ratings, and the consensus says, smart, smoothly directed, and enriched with a deeper exploration of the franchise's thought-provoking themes, Catching Fire proves a thoroughly compelling second installment in the Hunger Games series. That's awesome. And it did a little better than the first one. I believe the first one got in 84. First one, I think, is 83,
84?
Yes, 84. So 84. It's faring well. It's faring great. I usually like to look at the top critics. Let's see. Great work from A-list.
Top critics is 90, just 90%.
Yeah, which is, like, that's, I mean, we always talk about Oscar stuff. I mean, I don't think this is going to have a big Oscar appeal, just no. As a realist. But that's a really high score in comparison.
It is, and I think what's the most important part, if you look at the audience rating, which is a 94%.
Yeah.
Which is incredibly high for a movie, because if you look at another film that's come out this year and gotten terrific critical review, and was one of my favorite movies of the year, Gravity, while that one has, it's loading, a 97%, only 86% of the audience liked it. So I think this is definitely a huge crowd pleaser.
Yeah, definitely. So, where are we at? Okay, and last thing we want to talk about was box office. Right now it's estimated at $161 million. And I'm trying to see if it's breaking any records. I think it's...
Well, it is the fourth highest grossing weekend of all time.
Is that true?
Yes, it is. Marvel's The Avengers is number one, followed by Iron Man 3 and Harry Potter and Deathly Hallows Part 2. But Hunger Games Catching Fire beat out The Dark Knight Rises by a little less than 1 million.
Which is crazy, man.
Yeah.
It's insane.
It has made so much money. And the thing is, with The Avengers, Iron Man 3, and Harry Potter and Deathly Hallows Part 2, they all had 3D tickets, which boosts prices a lot. Catching Fire, no 3D tickets. So this, at this point in time, is the highest grossing opening weekend for a non-3D film.
So, yeah, I'm seeing right here in our Box Office Mojo, if the estimate holds, it'll be the fourth highest, it'll be the top debut ever for a 2D-only movie. So,
and
awesome.
Jumping back quickly to what audiences are saying on IMDb, which just takes viewers' reviews, it is the 239th best movie ever made, according to IMDb. It has an 8.3 out of 10.
And that's, for IMDb, that's huge, because IMDb is usually lower.
To put it into perspective, Gravity has an 8.5 right now.
Mm-hmm.
And 12 Years a Slave, which I'm actually also looking forward to seeing next weekend, has an 8.7.
So there you have it.
And that's just me plugging two movies. Anyways.
Yeah, so that's it for our thoughts of Catching Fire. I'm sure we'll talk about more things in the weeks to come, as well as April and Elena's thoughts. Hopefully April sees it soon. We have a lot of emails here. We're just going to take little snippets out of them because we just have so many things to say. We're just going to glance through and see if there's something we haven't talked about. Let's see. So Drew writes, we're taking the snippets. Drew writes, the ending was very good, exactly like the book, with a few slight changes that didn't stand out. Also, they revealed the new Mockingjay at the end. So yeah, we didn't talk about that.
Oh, I forgot about that.
The little logo there. I thought it was really awesome. The Catching Fire logo kind of, they have this little flappy scene. That sounds really bad. It flaps. The wings flap, my friend. And it becomes...
Yes, that marks a good movie.
when the wings flap, you know it's good. Let's see. So Jada,
we just want to point out that you guys wrote quite the reviews.
You guys can write a lot, and we definitely love it all. We apologize for this. Okay, here we go. Another great move by Jada writes, another great move by Francis. No shaky cam. I was extremely pleased with his choice of camera work. While he still kept the reality aspect of the movie, he made it way more smooth than Gary Ross did. And then she talks about Sam Claflin as Finnick O'Dare, blew her skepticism right out of the water with his performance. No hint of his English accent. Oh, look at this. She also says, if anyone caught that subtle mahogany line during the victory tour at the party at President Snow's mansion, I'm just as baffled as you are.
And she also mentions later on that Liam Hemsworth as Gale in the movie, or blah, 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 blah. Liam Hemsworth as Gale Hawthorne. I don't even know where to start with this. I'm sort of disappointed with how they had Liam portrayed Gale in the movie. I'm not disappointed with Liam's performance at all. I just wish that they had every scene that Gale was in, he wasn't weak or pining for Katniss helplessly or not even talking at all. I just wanted a little more depth to his character than just being the third to a love triangle in the series.
I get that.
Yeah, that was kind of my feeling as well. Maybe not that deep, distinct. I don't know what the word I'm looking for.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so Jada, I see where you're coming from. I get that. You want to see what Veronica had to say, Alex? I bolded what we're going to say.
Sure. Oh, how did we not talk about this?
I know.
Thank you. So Veronica writes, My favorite part they added in was President Snow's granddaughter.
Yeah.
I feel like she symbolized how influential Katniss and Peter were. I'm not sure about the district, but there was a scene where a little girl gave her flowers and said that Katniss was her role model. It shows how truly they're celebrities in the eyes of the people. I wish they had showed the watch. That was the only disappointment. I cried when she talked about Ruin when Peeta did the painting and when Mags died. I laughed at Caesar's expressions. I feel that he is a fangirl at heart. They ended it so perfectly. So yeah, President Snow's granddaughter.
What an amazing, amazing addition. It's such an effective way to not outright say it, but show how influential. Like, it kind of shows how Katniss is winning. Like, besides Snow's efforts to keep her under wraps, as you know, per se, she's wearing her hair in a braid. I thought she looked like Prim a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought she was a great addition. She was a very, very neat way to show sort of the barometer of the public. And the scene where she's like, I hope I love somebody that much someday.
Yeah.
Like, that, it's just perfect. Mm-hmm. I thought she was a great addition. I kind of want to see her in Mockingjay.
Right. It's an interesting character. It feels like Madge. Like, their version of Madge.
Yeah.
Let's see what else. Veronica also mentioned the part where Mags died. I agree. That was, like, heartbreaking. It was like, whoa.
Alright, this... Remind me, was Mags mute in the book?
I noticed that too. I don't think so.
Yeah, because, I mean, I understand in a movie it's a visual format, so you can have a mute character much more easily in the book. But when she didn't talk, I'm like, what was that?
Yeah, that seemed a little weird. Maybe she is mute in the movie, who knows?
Yeah.
Alright, so the next email comes from Alexandra, and she says, there were direct quotes from the book and the script. I thought that their ability to stay so true to the book was incredible, and all of the character development was well executed, especially Effie's. You could really see the change in the character throughout the film, and Elizabeth Banks brought a whole new level to Effie's character. And she also mentions later in her email that Jen should win another Oscar. So.
Oh, don't worry, Alexandra. She'll keep winning Oscars.
She'll keep winning Oscars. So thank you, Alexandra. And finally, we have an email from Adele. Do you want to see what we want to take from this one?
Yep. There we are. Give me a second as people walk through the house. Sorry. No. So, Adele says, in Catching Fire, this was not a problem as many of lines came from the book. This movie did a great job establishing Katniss's PTSD, or post-traumatic stress disorder, from the start and carried it throughout the film. Is there more that I need to read, or is that it?
That's good, yeah. Okay, so I agree. Okay. The PTSD stuff, like, you know, the mental trauma with her having the dreams. Do you remember that time?
Yeah, and one of the early scenes that really struck me was that when she's hunting in the woods and there's the turkeys, and then it just flashes to her POV as she shoots a tribute.
That was
That's a perfect visual representation.
It's super powerful, and, you know, that explains exactly what she's going through. So the final email we're going to read a part of today is from Morantz, and Morantz writes, I was, however, without giving it away, really upset with the ending. It was way too abrupt for my liking. Now, I've heard, I included this email because I've heard this from many people. Do you think that the ending was a little too abrupt for non-book fans?
I feel like the short answer is yes. And the long answer is that the ending of the book is abrupt, but I definitely understand. Because if you look at it, there isn't really too much setup for how the movie's going to end. Like, you see them in the Hunger Games, and they don't... They set up how Beatty, you know, electrocuted people, and you can see that as foreshadowing. But really, the whole final events, it's probably about 10 minutes of screen time. Mm-hmm. Like, they don't really set it up as the climax. You don't have, like, the big music coming in. It just happens.
That that's true. I'd say that's true. I'd say, however, I feel like that's the point, though. It had to be kind of jarring. It had to be kind of, you know... I don't think it was like the first one. The first one, if you listen back to our episode, then it's called Movie Madness. I kind of talked about how I felt like it took forever to get to the arena, and then we got to the arena, we got out super quickly, and then boom, it was over, we're done.
Yeah.
But this one, I felt, was a little more well-paced. So I kind of see where she's coming from, but I think it was more well-paced than the first one.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, so that is all we are going to read off from emails this week. If you have any other thoughts, be sure to email us at comments@rebellionradiopodcast.com or tweet at us at twitter.com/rrpodcast, Facebook us at facebook.com/rrpodcast, and we can read all more thoughts next week on our episode. That is going to do it for our show this week, guys. Thank you all very much for listening. We don't usually do a hurrah on our review episodes, but... I really wanted to put an Atlas by Coldplay, which is the song that Coldplay wrote for the movie that's in the credits. So this week, enjoy Francis Lawrence's pick, which is Atlas by Coldplay.
Good choice, Francis.
Yeah, thank you, Francis, for that one. So we already mentioned most of our plugs, but just be sure to visit rebellionradiopodcast.com for all your show needs. Find out how to contact us, how to follow, like us, tumble with us. I'm not sure if that's... Follow us on Tumblr. And
Yeah, you can tumble as well.
You can that's tumble fine. With us. And then,
we're not going to judge.
And we have our iTunes link on there. Please subscribe. Please rate and review us. Thank you very much. That's going to do it, everybody. Thank you all very much for listening. My name is Hurley Commons.
I'm Alex Colova.
Fight the Capitol and the hunger. Join the rebellion.
Some saw the sun. Some saw the smoke. Some heard the gun. Some bent the bow. Sometimes the wire was tense for. Caught in the fire. Say, oh.